What we'd like to do this morning is have a hearing that's going to look at the scope of the governor's interagency agreements. That these are concerns that have been raised in this committee to a level, not just simply this year, but and certainly previous governors have had these interagency agreements, but it's risen to a level that's unusual. And we had discussion with Senator Betzold when Senator Betzold presented his division report, and we thought it would be appropriate to have a fuller full committee hearing, because Senator Betzold, you've had some significant discussion within your division, but to have this vetted by the full committee. Obviously, there's been some emphasis, some press emphasis, and emphasis, I think, out of here relative to the support our troops account, and obviously, glancing around the room, I think a lot of folks are here concerned one way or another relative to that account. But you know, this hearing is going to look at the broader scope of these interagency agreements, along with some particular discussion of that account. But we're going to try to take a look at the gamut of the accounts and how they integrate within the state budget. So to do so, we're going to start with our fiscal staff, with Mr. Mossman and Mr. Lundeen. And obviously, Mr. Lundeen is the fiscal analyst for the State Department's division. And members, you've got within your packets some work done, I think, both by the fiscal staff and along with Ms. Lonergan. That's useful. We've got the spreadsheet, which I think we saw the other day, but also we have an outline that's a little bit clearer, more clear, on the interagency agreements that's in your packet. And at the end, we do have a couple of bills of Senator Olsen and Senator Betzold that we'll hear when we're done with testimony. So, Mr. Mossman, Mr. Lundeen.
Mr. Chairman and members, Matt Mossman from Senate Fiscal Staff. I'm just going to start and just kind of frame up a little bit the in response to requests for some background information on interagency agreements. What we pulled together is just a little bit of history and as best we can, and the authority for such agreements, and then some information on recent practice, particularly in support the interagency agreements in support of the governor's office functions. Minnesota Statutes 471.59 is the statutory language pertaining to the authorization of joint powers, the joint exercise of powers between multiple government entities. Authority was originally established in 1943, and at that time the statute was defined as pertaining to municipalities as defined as being cities, villages, boroughs, counties, towns, and school districts is what it's pertained to, and that law has been amended at various times over the years, but in 1965 that list was amended to be expanded to include agencies of the state of Minnesota, federal government, and some other agencies. So as you might imagine, there's quite a bit of interagency arrangements that go on just in the normal course of state government business. There's probably some that exist right now on the state accounting system. There's some that exist on interagency agreements for legal services between agencies and the AG. All throughout government, you might imagine there's some between corrections and human services for various programs. So just in the normal course of carrying out the state's delivery of services, agencies, both local and among state agencies, will engage in agreements. This is the authority also then that's been relied on for the interagency agreements between the governor's office and administrative agencies to support personnel costs that have been providing services for the office of the governor. We weren't able to uncover through research what exactly was the first instance of this occurring, but certainly it was occurring by 1992, and at that time there was some language, a rider put into a budget bill that began to require annual reporting of these interagency agreements between the executive branch agencies and the governor's office, and those documents are the basis for the information that Mr. Lundin will go through in a little bit, giving the history of them. And then since then, there's been some amendments in last year's law to set up the special revenue fund account for some of the transfers that occur in fiscal 2010 to support those agreements. Before I turn it over to Mr. Lundin, I would also just say that then these interagency agreements, there's an individual interagency agreement on each one of these arrangements that exists, and it talks about the services to be provided, the terms of the agreement, the consideration of payment, and those things. And there's a list of them that has been summarized. Senator Betzel's office, I believe, put together a list that looks like this, that is in your packets, that lists the summarizes the individual agreements for fiscal 2010. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Lundin to walk through the spreadsheet giving the history of the spending relationship.
Okay, Mr. Lundin.
Thank you. The spreadsheet that I'm going to be looking at is the one that says Office of the Governor, and it starts out with fiscal year 92 and goes through fiscal year 2010. And what I did to compile this information was I went back to fiscal year 92 and looked at the reports that were provided to the budget chairs over the years that kind of detailed the type of interagency agreements and support that the governor's office was receiving. And as Mr. Mossman said, this has been a rider in the state government bill going back to 92 was the first report we had. And there were a couple years I couldn't find reports for 1995 and 1996 and 2003. So I have not shown those in this spreadsheet. But what I've attempted to do in this spreadsheet is to show the total amount of the interagency agreements, dollars that have flown in or flowed into the governor's office, and then also to show the general fund direct appropriation that the governor's office has gotten. And I've made some adjustments to the appropriation if there's been unallotments, like the recent unallotments in 2009 and 2010. For the most part, the general fund direct appropriation has been for the operating expenses of the governor's office. I might just point out in fiscal year 92, there was a one-time appropriation of about $500,000 that was related to some legal expenses. But otherwise, other than that, all the years going forward, it's pretty much the operating budget that you're looking at there. As I was going through these reports, there wasn't always a dollar amount specified for some of the staffing services that were provided. I know looking back in fiscal year 1998 under the Carlson administration, there were sometimes some staff names listed but no dollar amount assigned to the support that was provided to the office. And I think another one that was consistent, especially in the Ventura and Pawlenty administrations, was related to the IT support that came from admin and later OET to the office. There wasn't a dollar amount assigned to that. One of the common things, as you look at the spreadsheet, you can see during the Ventura administration, there wasn't a lot of use of the interagency agreements. One of the constants through the Carlson administration, Ventura and Pawlenty, was the groundskeeper at the governor's residence. And this one wasn't always done by interagency agreements. Sometimes there were administrative orders to make that transfer. One of the big, during the Ventura administration in fiscal year two, why it kind of spikes up is there were interagency agreements with Minnesota Planning and with the development of the performance measures and reporting all related to the big plan in the Ventura administration. When you get to fiscal year four, you kind of see the amount of the interagency agreements have kind of ramped up a bit. And kind of one of the first interagency agreements in the Pawlenty administration was related to the Washington, D.C. office. In the 2003 session, when we were making budget cuts, one of the recommendations from the governor's office was to reduce the governor's office budget by $260,000 a year. And so this was taken by the legislature and enacted into law. There wasn't any specific rider abolishing the Washington, D.C. office, just the budget was reduced by that amount. And in testimony that we had afterwards, there were questions about, you know, why did, was the Washington, D.C. office reinstated? And the testimony from the governor's office at the time was that state agencies were interested in this office and were willing to put some funds forward because they felt value in the Washington, D.C. office. And then it wasn't until fiscal year 5 when the governor's office started to pay for some of the staffing costs out of the office. It started out at about 50% of the salaries were paid out for these policy staff. And in fiscal year 2008, it had changed to about 60%. Another change that came up until fiscal year 2008 when the lieutenant governor was the commissioner of DOT, a portion of her salary was coming out of the DOT budget, and once she was no longer commissioner, then her salary was totally supported by the general fund appropriations in the governor's office. One other item that I did note on there, if you look down, I have highlighted the sex offender policy coordinator. This was a position that was actually started in the governor's office in fiscal year 2005 and then was later moved out in fiscal year 2008 into the Department of Corrections. And I just kind of point this out to just kind of illustrate some of the difficulty in kind of tracking some of these positions and these dollars. I'm not making a comment on, you know, whether it's more appropriate for this position to be in the governor's office or in the Department of Corrections, but just to kind of show how some of these dollars are flowing. And then, as Mr. Mossman did note, last year in the state government budget bill, we did kind of more formalize the agreements by putting a rider into statute that kind of limited the amount of the agreements to $702,000 each year of the biennium and transferred the dollars into a special revenue account and then appropriated those dollars out to the governor's office. And to date, there's been about $675,000 that has been transferred into the governor's office. And about 330 of the anticipated transfers will be going for the Washington, D.C. office, and the remaining about 372 then would be available for staffing in the governor's office. And I guess I'd be open to any questions.
Okay, thanks for the summary. Questions for the, Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Lundeen, would each one of these interagency agreements reflect one individual, or is it possible that the interagency agreements are, you know, used for, you know, one part-time person here and a part-time person there? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how these translate into the bodies that were supporting the governor's office.
Well, I think a lot of times in the cases of the policy staff, a number of agencies are paying for that person's salary. So the governor's office may pay for a portion of it, and say the Department of Corrections, you know, may pay for a portion. And I understand the governor's office came up with kind of a formula for how agencies should pay. And then also included in a lot of those interagency agreements, they will be written for both providing salary support for a policy staff and then also for providing support for the Washington, D.C. office.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lundeen had talked about the fact that we created a special account last year. I had actually suggested that if the governor felt he needed additional people working in his office, rather than going through this process of pulling money out of all the various agencies to support individuals working for the governor's office, why don't we just take the money out of the agencies, direct it permanently to the governor's office? If he felt he needed these people working for him, just give him the money and do it. Just hire them. And the governor's office did not want to do that. So that's why we went the different approach, saying, okay, we'll just funnel the money out of the agencies into a special account, and then they can hire the people. I mean, it seems to be doing the same thing. But I think you can see the numbers here have clearly ramped up during the last 8 years, where the interagency agreements have really spiked in using more people. And it's just, you know, a questionable trend at a time when we're telling everybody else to tighten your belt, do more with less, live within your means.
Thank you. Other questions for either Mr. Lundin or Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lundin, I thought I heard you say that you had highlighted a reference to the education policy coordinator. I've read it all and I can't find it now. What am I missing here? Is it in this sheet?
Sex offender.
Or is it somewhere else?
Actually, in this sheet, I have not shown the individual positions on here.
Okay.
I do have another spreadsheet that does kind of show the different positions, and one of the positions was an education policy coordinator.
Well, education or just regular overall policy coordinator?
Well, there was a education policy coordinator.
Okay, that one I saw.
I'm trying to recall that one. I think that one might have been fully funded by the Department of Education,
yes,
or at least for a portion of the year.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for our staff? Okay. Well, thank you very much. And obviously, you'll continue to be here during the course of the hearing for questions. Next, we'd like to have from the legislative auditor, the auditor, I think, Jim Nobles, and then I think also we have Amy Jorgensen, who's been the auditor from the office, who's worked on this. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor for the state of Minnesota, and with me is Amy Jorgensen, who is an audit manager in our office, and she was the manager for our most recent audit, not only of the governor's office, but of the other constitutional offices as well. And just for your understanding and context, let me start there by reminding you that the Office of the Legislative Auditor audits all of the various units within the executive branch of state government, and that does include the constitutional offices as well. And for a long period of time, we have followed the pattern of auditing each of those constitutional offices every other year. We audit each of them at midterm and at the end of a term, and so we recently completed our audit of Governor Plenty's audit during his term, and then we will do one additional audit at the end of his term. For us, these are what we can call control and compliance audits. We are looking to see that those individual offices are operating under adequate financial controls, complying with various finance-related statutory requirements. For us, they are fairly straightforward audits in that these are relatively small offices. All of the constitutional offices, including the governor's office, are relatively small. They mostly have financial transactions that relate to payroll. We do, I would say, fairly extensive audit work there, just again because they're relatively small. We try to be aware of some of the issues that may be of concern to the legislature or the public and give those some special attention. And I would say with the governor's office, of course, that has related to the interagency agreements as well as travel. And so we try to give those some special consideration. Specific to the interagency agreements, the only issue we have had recently is that the governor's office was utilizing a person from the Office of Enterprise Technology that was referred to in the previous testimony. There was not a formal agreement for that position, basically a person that had been delegated from OET to the governor's office to support their IT operations, and we felt that that should have be formalized in a written agreement. And so we made that recommendation, and it was accepted and implemented by the governor's office. So, Mr. Chairman, I think with that, if Ms. Jorgensen has other things that she would like to add, or we can simply be available for your questions.
Okay. Ms. Jorgensen?
I'm available to take any questions about the actual what happened during the audit.
Just to be clear, because, again, we compiled a list of what we thought. Using the interagency agreements, it appears that the governor's office used about $700,000 from other agencies basically to fund individuals working through his office. Is that a fair statement?
Senator, that is a fair statement,
okay,
yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Ms. Jorgensen or Mr. Nobles, one of the things that I think I mentioned this the other day in the committee, we often don't have the context of what happens elsewhere. Any sense of whether or not other governors in other states have used similar kinds of agreements at this level?
Mr. Chairman, no, we really haven't made that kind of reference. We're looking, certainly in the context of a control and compliance audit, specifically whether or not the governor or the other constitutional officers or other state agencies are complying with Minnesota state law. I think if we were doing an evaluation, as we do through our other division in the Office of the Legislative Auditor, that is the sort of thing we probably would do. But we have not ever been asked to conduct an evaluation of the management of any of the constitutional offices.
Okay. And Mr. Lundin went through the history of the interagency agreements and indicated it gets a little bit vague the further you get back in time. Any sense, did you look at anything in the context of the history of the office?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, we do look for trends. Obviously, as we're preparing for an audit, we do some analysis and would look for any trend, and that would certainly be one. Has there been a significant increase? We would look to see the nature of those increases. It might be just something we would want to follow up on. But I think I will say the obvious, and that is, you know, certainly within the context of conducting a financial audit, we are not posing policy questions about whether these arrangements are appropriate or not, or even if a particular increase is appropriate. We would look to see whether or not that action was taken in compliance with the law. And our understanding certainly is consistent with the testimony you heard earlier that the governor is utilizing a provision of state law that is used widely in state government. I think it is obviously for this committee and others within the legislature to question, as you have, whether or not from a policy perspective you think the governor's office or others are using this provision appropriately.
And in the preparation of the audit, was the governor's office forthcoming with the information you were looking for?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. All the governors we have ever audited and other constitutional offices are very cooperative. I might add, they really don't have any choice. we have rather strong authority, and they understand that. We can see any records, any information, talk to anyone that we want to. We would find it completely unacceptable for us not to be able to see any documentation that we ask for or to talk to anybody we want to talk to.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for the auditor's office? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, in setting up this hearing, we had sent a letter to Mr. De La Forest, the Chief of Staff for the Governor, asking him to testify, and we weren't sure who the appropriate person would be, and I think Mr. De La Forest indicated that the appropriate person for testimony to help us out would be Ms. Brown, who's the Director of Operations in the office. I'm looking. So appreciate your coming to the committee. If everybody might identify yourselves for the record. I don't know if you want to offer some testimony at the outset, and then we can have some discussions as to how you might like to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, whoops. My name is Paula Brown. I'm the Director of Operations with the Governor's Office, and I've been the Director of Operations since 1999. With me today to testify are Michael Pugliese, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and Lee Buckley, who has led the Faith and Community-Based Service Initiatives efforts for Minnesota. Mr. Chair, because many of the committee's questions may be answered through our testimony, I would request that the committee hold questions until after the testimony is completed. I'd like to begin by providing background information about how the Governor's Office has used interagency agreements. We see the interagency agreement as a useful tool that provides the executive branch flexibility in allocating resources to meet the state's needs. It's a tool that allows agencies to work with one another and with the governor's office to share resources and expertise. Minnesota law requires that by September 1 of each year, the Commissioner of Finance report to the State Government Finance Committee chairs any personnel costs incurred by the Office of the Governor that were supported by appropriations to other agencies during the previous fiscal year. This administration has complied with that every year. This annual report includes the amounts contributed for the faith and community-based services position. Minnesota law also requires that the Office of the Governor inform the chairs before initiating any interagency agreement. The Governor's office has complied with this as well. Starting in July of 2009, the legislature required that the Governor's office receive payments of no more than $702,000 each fiscal year from other executive agencies to support personnel costs incurred by our office. Payments received are deposited into the special revenue account that is appropriated to the Office of the Governor, and the Governor's office has established that special revenue fund for this purpose. The interagency agreement is a mechanism used to outline the services provided and the funds required for those services. Every budget year, this office has spoken to the committees about the use of interagency agreements with agencies. Every 2 years, this office is routinely audited by the Legislative Auditor's Office, as mentioned by Mr. Nobles. Part of that audit includes review of the interagency agreements. In November of 2005, the Governor established a faith and community-based service initiative to develop a closer connection between state government and faith and community service organizations to better deliver services to our citizens. We recruited Lee Buckley from the private sector to head this effort. With the increased engagement of our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and the state's commitment to assisting troops and their families both during and following their return from active duty, the faith and community-based service position devoted time to outreach efforts for our veterans. Ms. Buckley's role included activities relating to increasing awareness about the benefits available to underserved veterans. As that work evolved, an interagency agreement was developed between the Governor's office and the Department of Veterans Affairs to cover a portion of Ms. Buckley's compensation. Those agreements began in fiscal year 2008, continued through fiscal year 09, and exist in fiscal year 10. The agreement outlines services provided and the agency's contribution for those services. It does not specify what funds will be used to pay for the services. That decision was appropriately left to the Department of Veterans Affairs. I will now turn to the Deputy Commissioner to address that decision.
Commissioner?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. First, I'd like to recognize and express my appreciation for the past and present support that the legislature has lent my department, and more importantly, the veterans we serve. There are many champions of veterans on this committee, and I acknowledge that and I appreciate that. My hope today is to clarify some of the misconceptions that currently exist regarding the interagency agreement that I chose to enter into for the services, the part-time temporary services of Lee Buckley. One of the biggest missions we have as a department is to reach out into the veteran community and contact and bring forward those veterans that haven't come forward for the benefits and services that they need and are entitled to. Lee Buckley brought to the table great expertise, great connections. She understood our mission, and she did a wonderful job doing exactly that, reaching out into the veteran community. I think there's some misconception about what outreach actually is, and I'd like to just take a moment to explain what outreach means within the Department of Veterans Affairs, both state and federal. When we're talking about outreach, we're not talking about direct services to veterans. We're talking about individuals that reach out into the community to heighten awareness and identify those veterans that, for whatever reason, have not come forward to try and bring them past those barriers that exist. We have many great direct services and programs for veterans, but if they're not coming forward and receiving them, they really don't mean much. And statistics show that, unfortunately, only about 40% of veterans ever do come forward to receive the needed benefits that they are deserving of and are entitled to and have earned through their military service. That's why outreach is such a vital part of what we do. Lee Buckley did this for the department. 25% of her time was working for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, not the governor's office, the Department of Veterans Affairs, That's why we paid her for that 25% time of her service. I chose to pay it out of the Support Our Troops License Plate Fund because that's what that fund was created for. As many of you here know, you were part of passing that legislation. It was created so that we could create an outreach division. It seemed very logical to me that someone that was doing outreach for the department into the veteran community should be paid from the fund that was created to fund outreach. I'm not aware of the other interagency agreements that go on, and I really don't concern myself with that. All I concerned myself with is what is the best way to serve veterans. And utilizing Lee Buckley, who already brought to the table a world of experience and wonderful connections and already knew our mission, made a lot of sense. Rather than have to hire a full-time, permanent employee to do this that would have to be trained, we were able to tap in an existing resource on a part-time, temporary basis to do this job, and she did it extremely well, and we're still receiving the dividends as a result of her hard work. I'm hoping that we could change the tone a little bit and turn these lemons into lemonade and really try to promote the good that this fund provides to our veteran community, our military community, and their families. The negative attention that's been brought onto this Support Our Troops license plate has a real negative effect on our ability to serve the veteran community in the future. If you go and look at some of the blogs that are going on out there right now, a lot of people are talking about turning in the plate, not buying the plate, and that's a source of funding that we rely on and military affairs relies on to reach out and serve our veterans, their families, our military members, and their families. So I'm hoping maybe we can get some positive publicity for the license plate out of this hearing, and hopefully the media that's here will accurately report on what this fund is for and that we've used this fund for the exact purpose for which it was created. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Buckley?
Mr. Chair, good morning, and good morning to members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lee Buckley, and I'd like to take a few minutes to share with you and the audience highlights of my work as Special Advisor on Faith and Community Service Initiatives. By way of background, my professional experience for 25 years prior to joining the governor's office involved new business development, project management, management training, consulting, operations management, and labor contract negotiations. I am an experienced volunteer who for the past 8 years has been engaged in the support and ministry of recovery, working with people who suffer from addictive and destructive behaviors and traumatic experiences. In November 2005, I was offered and accepted the opportunity to use my experiences and my passion to serve the people of the state of Minnesota as Special Advisor on Faith and Community Service Initiatives. In that role, I worked to develop a closer connection between state government and faith and community organizations throughout the state. And I was the sole employee who performed all activities in support of this initiative, including administrative and technical, management, strategic planning, operational, and creative and communicative tasks. Highlights of my work with the Governor's Council on Faith and Community Service Initiatives includes planning and executing a successful Veterans Affairs faith-based forum for a statewide audience. I provided a department presence on the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon effort and with community and faith-based organizations and churches. Okay. Served as a committee member through NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness for Minnesota, for the Vet-to-Vet Support Program. I facilitated numerous referrals to the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and other veterans organizations and services. The Governor's Council on Faith and Community Service Initiatives is proud of the work that it has done to support veterans, military members, and their families. If you could follow the progression of support for military members, veterans, and their families in the state, you would find the following. Our initial focus was to target the returning National Guard members who may or may not be. Then our focus progressed to target all veterans in the state. The special needs of women veterans then became very apparent. My last assignment before transferring to the Minnesota Department of Corrections was to target the unique needs of veterans of color. Now, I will say to you today that there is more work to do. Veterans of color, both male and female, are disparately homeless, imprisoned, unemployed, addicted, and in poor mental and physical health. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but from my personal experience, I know that the work is not done. We are not done when a female veteran, who I'll call veteran number one, who served two terms in the Gulf War, came home and served time in the federal prison before being diagnosed with suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual trauma, heightened anger issues, depression, and addiction. She now receives help from the VA, but has not been able to live a complete life of independence. I'm grateful, however, that she can reach out to a support group and a place of worship where they can aid with her accountability, provide support to her family, and encourage her to stay on the road to recovery. I know that the work is not done when the Vietnam veteran, who I'll call veteran number two, a Navy SEAL, had a bad weekend, began drinking after a long period of sobriety, gets picked up for a DUI, placed in a county jail, gets released, but drinks again before his family can pick him up, and then he gets arrested again and thrown back in jail. I know that the work is not done when this decorated veteran Navy SEAL is so disturbed that he cannot stop drinking even after going to jail. I am so grateful to the Farmington police officers who responded as the first city in the state of Minnesota to receive the honorary distinction of being proclaimed a Yellow Ribbon City. They knew that it was time to try a different approach, and they took veteran number two to the hospital rather than to jail. Unfortunately, veteran number two, my cousin, died a month ago, February 13th, 2010. The day after being released from the hospital from a massive heart attack at age 55. See, I know that the work is not done when the only evidence of receiving orders to serve in combat in Vietnam appears in the physical health of veteran number three. Today, his left leg is amputated because of the effects of diabetes and heart and circulatory problems, and he lives with the threat of losing his right leg. Today, he receives dialysis 4 to 5 times a week and is on the donor list to receive a kidney that his own body will reject because of his ongoing kidney disease. Today, this veteran is not service-connected due to problems with his documentation because he did not want anyone to know, and he is still hesitant today to let anyone know that he was a veteran of the Vietnam War. While these accounts are not unlike other veterans, these happen to be veterans of color. They happen to be people I know, people I care about, and people I love. Their families are my family. So I say to you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, our work is not done. At this time, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I would like to introduce Kathy Vitalis, Executive Director of MACFEE.
Well, tell you what I'd like to do, if I might, and I appreciate your testimony, Ms. Buckley, and the work that you've done. And Ms. Brown, I wanted to give you the opportunity to make your presentation as you wanted. You asked that it be done without questions. We have a couple of issues here. There's the larger issue of the interagency agreements, and I think several of us have some questions directed toward that. We have kind of the subset of what's happened with the supporter troops appropriations and how it integrates with the governor's office and so on. And so I'd like to kind of divide the hearing. We also have several folks from the veterans organizations who'd like to testify. So before we get into the entirety of that issue, I'd like to go back to the interagency agreements and have some questions about that, and then we can talk about the particular issue. And Ms. Brown, here's, I think, the concern that we have, and Ms. Buckley actually highlights a couple of the concerns with her testimony in terms of how these programs, which are quite legit, to say the least, and have and are significant and excellent programs. I mean, there was a great story, I think several days ago in the New York Times, about the difficulties Gulf War veterans have within the criminal justice system. It was, you know, kind of from a national perspective, but they did, you know, they touched on several vets from the Gulf War. So what we want to try to explore is the history of these agreements, and I think the concern that we have within this committee, because obviously prior to chairing the full committee, I chaired State Departments in a different configuration, and at that time there was very little discussion of these agreements. They were not non-existent, but close to non-existent. And just to kind of set the stage, you know, I've had just a parade of people in my office over these last couple of years with our budgets, talking about, you know, people from the agencies, and the governor's commissioners, not just to be fair, not criticizing the governor's office, they're not going to do that, but talking about what's going on within their agency, the concerns they have, the budget cuts. Are we imposing too much by way of budget cuts, too little by way of budget cuts? And I don't begrudge the governor trying to have a policy interest in a broader range of policies. For instance, I think there's an interagency agreement relative to education. And I'm just looking at the list we have. Transfer from education, $30,000. If the governor wants to have an education policy advisor within the governor's office being paid $30,000 or $70,000 or $100,000, there might be some legitimacy to that. But how can we as a legislature deal with the agencies on one hand saying, let's use the most notable example, Senator Higgins. Where we're looking at the difficulty of the state budget in the totality, you know, the governor obviously has a different perspective than us, and again, that's not a criticism. That's going to be true of any governor in any legislature. But we are told continually we can't cut the Department of Corrections. So if we have money transferred from corrections to the governor's office, and I'm not sure if we have, and we do have money transferred from corrections to the governor's office through the interagency agreement, it becomes tougher then for us to say, well, yeah, we should hold your department harmless, but then we have somebody else over here doing corrections work. So it becomes a question of transparency and what the purpose of the interagency agreements are, and particularly at a time when we're cutting budgets. And so we have this significant confusion or blurring of lines between agency and governor's office. So that speech leads to the question of, why don't we just simply say the governor has these responsibilities for implementation of policy, and to do so, we need these people funded through the governor's office.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you know, the governor's office has looked at these interagency agreements as a useful tool, as I indicated. They've been used historically. I've got information. Well, I worked in Governor Ventura's office. I know that the agreements were used to fund a results management position, to provide land support by the Office of Enterprise Technology for the groundskeeping position. During Governor Carlson's administration, it was used for senior policy advisors doing legislative and policy work, for groundskeeping services, for federal affairs work, for a tribal relations coordinator, technology coordination, and a few others. Governor Pawlenty's office has chosen to continue to use these interagency agreements. I understand what some of the committee's concerns are. Frankly, I thought that the Special Revenue Fund, which was created in July of 2009, took care of the transparency issues, as it does set up a special revenue account where all the money is deposited, and we tap that account to help fund these positions. So it's a place, along with our general fund appropriation, which shows the money being spent.
Well, I think the fund was set up as a compromise with the administration in the context of promulgation of the budget. But when we now get back into the budget, and Senator Betzold is more the expert, obviously, in the interagency agreements, but I think it's a kind of a surprise to the other division chairman because, again, obviously, your office, not your particular job, but the governor's office is within the jurisdiction of Senator Betzold's division. I should mention for people in the audience less familiar with our division process that, and I'm going to ask him to speak when we get back to the direct veterans issue, that Senator Vickerman actually is the person who has jurisdiction over, as the commissioner knows, over Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs, whereas Senator Betzold has jurisdiction of the governor's office. And that's actually illustrative of the concern we have. Where in the case of, and I don't want to get into the particular veterans issue or the support of troops right now, but where we have Senator Vickerman trying to provide, and I think he takes pride in what he's done relative to military and veterans affairs, where we have Senator Vickerman trying to determine what's appropriate by way of funding, but then we're told, yeah, but we're funding this through the governor's office. Now, obviously, it's not your concern or the concern of folks who are in attendance today as to the structure of the finance committee or our finance divisions. But I do think it's illustrative then of, you know, does the left hand know what the right hand is doing, and does it all work? Because I think it was a surprise to other division chairmen to recognize the depth of involvement of the governor's office through other agencies. And I don't know, Sir Betzel, if that's a summary of what your committee's discussed.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, you know, we were confined to certain areas of the state government budget, the constitutional officers, the legislative budget, some of the major agencies. But we have seen, again, the trends of money coming in from other budget areas that are beyond our jurisdiction. And that's why I raised the issue a year ago. I said, if the governor's office needs the people, why don't we just, you know, work out with the other agencies and just appropriate the money out of them permanently to the governor's office? They didn't want to do that. But as I say, I'm kind of limited within the confines of the state government budget area because I don't have oversight over all these other budgets. And in the big scheme of things, when each budget chair looks at them, they say, well, it may look, you know, dollar-wise, a minor amount within the whole total budget. But when you start seeing the trends and starting adding up, you know, we're talking about money here.
So, Ms. Brown, why don't we do that? Why don't we take the appropriation for the governor's office, and the governor's office comes to the legislature and says, we need an education policy advisor to do this job in the governor's office. We need the director of operations to do this job in the governor's office. We need the deputy chief of staff to do this job. We need somebody for faith-based work to do this job. And why is that not a better way to budget? Isn't that more transparent to not just the legislature but to the public? You know, the commissioner alluded to confusion over press stories about this issue. So that kind of makes the point. Isn't it more transparent to the public then, and certainly to the legislature, and arguably to the rest of state government, to say, okay, the governor's office needs to have a budget of $1.3 million to encompass these responsibilities? I don't presume to be an expert on the federal budget, but I believe that's how the White House operates. If you go on a White House website and look at their staff, which obviously is a much bigger staff, you'll find that every position, and it doesn't matter who the president is, if you compare George Bush to Barack Obama, all of their positions are within the executive branch, not transferred between departments to the White House. So why don't we do it that way?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that would be one way to do it. I'd be happy to take that under advisement and speak with the governor and chief of staff about that idea. I will say that traditionally, the governor's office has looked at positions that are subject matter experts in specific issue areas, and it's those positions that work very closely with some of our specific agencies, and there's a link between what they're doing. While they're working for us as our employee, they are working extraordinarily closely with certain agencies, and it is historically those positions where we have chosen to use the interagency agreement to have the agency fund a portion of their salaries.
Well, I would hope there are people in the governor's office who work closely with the agencies. They're the not the governor's agencies in a personal sense, but they're part of the executive branch. So nobody would disagree with that. So what I'm hearing from you is, and maybe time doesn't permit, but I'm going to have to leave at 10 o'clock to present the budget bill to the tax committee because we're trying to expedite the process and for the first time, I believe, combine finance and taxes into my single bill. And there is some talk that we're going to try to have a conference committee finished by, you know, before the Passover Easter break on March 29th. Now, I expect Senator Betzold is going to be part of that conference committee. And Senator Betzold, you will be part of that conference committee. Sorry to break the news to you. you're suggesting maybe we should take a look at that in the context of this budget bill and maybe eliminate those costs, not destroy the integrity of what you're trying to do in the governor's office, but eliminate those costs to the agencies, because we will have an omnibus bill combining agencies and augmenting the governor's budget to that extent. Now, if it's $700,000 or $650,000, I don't want to speak for the rest of the conferees who, as just pointed out, haven't even been named. The bill hasn't passed yet. But assuming we have that opportunity, maybe we should explore that. And again, not cut back on the governor's, not say the governor's office can't do this, but augment the governor's budget. And your testimony seems to suggest that might be a good way to go.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't feel I'm in a position to necessarily recommend that. I would be happy to go back and talk with the governor and chief of staff about that idea.
And so, Ms. Brown, I want to suggest that you'd have the sole authority today to say yes and didn't want to suggest that obviously the governor is head of that office and the chief of staff is the staff executive. So I recognize it's a discussion within the governor's office as well. But, Senator Betzold, maybe we should explore that. What you suggested were these was trying to put a cap on the interagency agreements as one way to do it, and then we kind of find ourselves back to square one this year from where you were last year. So maybe the best thing is just to be honest and transparent with people and say, this is what the governor's office does, and make sure that the services, you know, the kinds of, we'll get back obviously to what Ms. Buckley testified to, but make sure those kinds of services are properly offered as to what's appropriate within the governor's office and what's appropriate within the agencies.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we've had some good explanations here historically what the statute says, what the legislative auditor does and exposes, and it clearly is, it's open, it's transparent. I'm trying to figure out what difference it makes. I'm not sure why this is a big issue. We understand that this is being done. We understand the purposes for which it's done. Is it make it harder to dig in and cut positions out of the governor's office? Is that the issue, or what's really driving this? I'm not quite tracking you can do it one way, you can do it another way. If we know what's being done, and there's some rationale one way or the other. It hasn't quite sunk into me yet.
Before I call on Senator Murphy, Senator Olson, let me suggest a couple of things. A question of transparency that I think if you'll talk to any of the division chairmen around the table, they have a tough time figuring out what's needed within their divisions. And it's accentuated by the budget situation we're in. There's no question if this is back in 2001 when we have lots of extra money, maybe the problem is not as accentuated as it is today, where every dollar is stretched. The second issue would be, and this might be a little bit unfair, but because I want to get into a little bit of Ms. Buckley's testimony in a few minutes, but where she talked about some of the services that she quite legitimately and appropriately probably has provided. Is that better done directly in the department, where there's an integration of all the veterans programs, so that you know maybe that program, what she's doing, ought to be accentuated, and that there are services not being provided because of that gap. But Senator Murphy, you wanted to,
Mr. Chairman, since it was probably my outburst that brought the veterans here today, I'd like to say a couple things. And Senator Olson, I think you might have touched on what my overall concern was. We've got a lot of returning veterans. We've got veterans, as Ms. Buckley attested to, that are unidentified, hard to reach. We've got a large population of those. We've got dwindling budgets, and we continue to fool ourselves by saying we're holding veterans harmless. And it's just, it's a shell game that I felt that I didn't want to participate in anymore. And the shell game is simple. It's the simple political statement that we're holding veterans harmless when everybody around this table and everybody in this room knows that's not true. Because if we were holding veterans harmless, we would start funding Mr. Puglisi's agency on a per capita basis, on a per veteran basis, instead of what we do today. If that was the case, that budget would have increased substantially over the past few years. We need 100 more Ms. Buckleys. And Ms. Buckley, you've done a wonderful job. And I want to say that my comments the other day, I can understand where people would have some pretty serious heartburn, and I apologize if you took that the wrong way. I feel that anyone that provides service to our veterans should be put on a pedestal, and if I knocked you off that pedestal, I apologize. But the bottom line is our veterans deserve better than this shell game that's going on. And I most certainly feel, Mr. Chairman, that our state deserves better than the shell game that's going on, because our veterans are underserved. And that's just the bottom line of it.
Yep. Sarah Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I appreciate your thought and passion, and many of us share it. But I think part of the difficulty is in the meaning of words. To hold harmless, you're saying, to hold the people harmless, we really need more money. I don't think that is how the term was being used. It was trying to not cut from that budget, but mm-hmm. other areas should be taking more of the cuts and not be removing money from that department. Well, and I hope that is as close as it comes. But you're absolutely right. You know, more needs to be invested. But I at least mm-hmm. from what has been done, I can't see that it has been inconsistent with what is legal in terms of the use of funds and trying to assure that these people, there is outreach and people are getting service. Is it ever enough? You know, thank heavens for the folks that are out there with funds, allowing us to give individually to other funds that support it, because we're just having a tough time trying to do it all government's way.
Mm-hmm. Senator Murphy.
And thank you, Senator Olson. And Mr. Chairman, committee members, I would hope that, as we continue to explore this issue, that people realize that, you know, the Support Our Troops license plate is a very worthy endeavor. And I would hope that the veterans out there and the people who do support our troops continue to support our troops. This license plate provides a lot of resources for our veterans, and we need to have more of that. And Senator Olson, you agree with that. And, I would hope that moving forward and in the legislative years to come, that this committee is able to provide more services for our veterans, because there's just a flood of veterans coming home. And they have some of the most horrendous injuries, and sometimes those horrendous injuries take years and years to surface. And they deserve not only our thanks, but they deserve our help. And Senator Olson, there's hundreds and thousands of people all across our state that provide services for veterans on a volunteer basis. And I think that a lot of us, those people go unheralded. And I'm looking around a lot of hats, and most of the hats in this room are all volunteers. They're not paid to come here and sit and lobby on behalf of veterans. They do it because it's in their heart. And thanks.
Okay, well, let's get back for a minute to Ms. Brown. I've tried to suggest how we might structure this. I have just a couple of our comments or questions, Ms. Brown, about, you know, your office, or just kind of the 35,000-foot view of this thing, to use the cliche. And I think in terms of the particulars, maybe it's probably unfair to, you know, single out Veterans Affairs and Ms. Buckley, but I think some of our concerns in the general are going to be reflected, Sarah Murphy, as you suggest, in the particular, as to the administration of the program and this intersection. So I'd like to get back to the general question. We have several people who've asked to testify. I know, I think, Ms. Buckley, you had asked that Ms. Vitalis be given a chance to testify. And we have several people from the Veterans Organization. So I'd like to have all those folks maybe at once offer some testimony, and then we can have some discussion about the integration of this program. But Ms. Brown, here, let me offer this as a particular concern, because I was chairman of State Departments when we had the principal interagency agreement within the Carlson administration, and the principal position was the groundskeeper at the governor's residence. And there was a very explicitly policy understanding that the person normally had come from Department of Administration. But we were talking about the governor's residence, where the governor lived. Now, obviously, Governor Carlson, as has been the case with other governors, spent part of the time at the residence, but it's used for ceremonial purposes, et cetera. We have to keep the building up. And so it made perfect sense in that instance, because there was such a strong intersection between administration, which normally does, you know, grounds upkeep and so on of the state buildings, and the residence is a state building, but it was the governor's residence. So that was pretty well understood. And if you go back to the Carlson interagency agreements, I think that was the nexus of that. In the Ventura administration, the use, and I think it was for the same purpose, was quite limited, and I think it was only for that purpose, I believe, during the Ventura administration. But here it's kind of risen to a much higher level. So, you know, it was easy for everybody to understand. Now it's not so easy, and this debate between Senator Olson and Senator Murphy relative to the vets issues illustrates that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're right. The groundskeeping position has historically been one of those positions that's worked through the interagency agreement, I believe, back, I don't know how many decades, probably. However, the Carlson administration used the interagency agreements for far more than the groundskeeping position. It was used for legislative and policy people. It was used for federal affairs work, tribal relations coordinator work. I wasn't in the governor's office during the Carlson administration, but the records existed, and you know, we saw historically how those interagency agreements had been used. In the Ventura administration, I agree, it was more limited than it had been in Carlson or is in the Pawlenty administration, but it was used for positions beyond the groundskeeping position. It was used for results management. It was used for land support provided by the Office of Enterprise Technology. So it is a tool that has been used by numerous administrations.
But, Ms. Brown, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this summary put together by staff, but and maybe we should, if you haven't seen it, if somebody can.
I might have it, but I haven't had a chance to study it.
But the dollar amounts, FY 93, $102,000, $29,000, $119,000, $149,000, which was the peak of the Carlson administration, $37,000, $39,000. Now we're into the Ventura administration, $36,000, $160,000. Now we get into the Pawlenty administration, $336,000, $529,000, $778,000, $849,000. In fiscal year 2007, $750,000, $677,000 because of the dollar limit placed on it by Senator Betzold. So that's why I suggest it's risen to a level where it's become not just a position or two, and there's been that transparency, but where we have no idea what's going on. And that's what makes it difficult, and then leads us to question, rightfully or wrongfully, whether or not services provided to vets are being provided to the vets. And get into other agencies, but again, that's become kind of the sub-issue in this regard.
Mr. Chair, can I comment on
sure,
that, please?
Sure.
You know, I'd like to make it clear that the money we allocated for the services we received from Ms. Buckley was exactly that, the services we received, the Department of Veterans Affairs and the veterans we serve. We did not pay the governor's office for the services she provided the governor's office. She worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs for 25% of her time on a temporary part-time basis. That's what we paid for. We didn't cover what she did for the governor's office. We covered what she did for veterans. And I can't think of a more appropriate way to have provided that funding than through the fund that was created to fund outreach. That's what she did for us, not for the governor's office, for the Department of Veterans Affairs and the veterans we serve. So I'd just like to make that clear. We weren't funding the governor's office staff. We were funding a staff person that worked for us 25% of the time.
Mr. Betzel. Mr. Chair, I have some ownership, you know, in this overall issue because I was the one who was introducing bills trying to set up this very kind of a fund. I was the one who served on the Tax Conference Committee in 2005 that actually put this program together. And the money was supposed to be for plates going to Department of Military Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs. As I recall, and this is a couple of years ago, but as I recall, the agencies thought that they could use existing resources in order to accomplish these programs. I bought my plates with that expectation, and I paid extra for so I could support the program. Now, if indeed the Department of Veterans Affairs felt it did not have the expertise or needed more resources, then I would have expected that they would have at some point come forward within the legislative process to seek that. Now, as I understand it, it was the governor's office who contacted the Department of Veterans Affairs. The governor's office asked if they could use some help, and the Department of Veterans Affairs agreed that they needed some help. Again, if they needed some help, they should have sought the help within their existing resources. But the fact was we had somebody already working through the governor's office that was now going to be assigned to the Department of Veterans Affairs and to use some of this plate money for that. Now, I don't find it offensive at all that we tell the public just how the money's being used. That should not be a problem. And if people have issues or concerns, the public has a right to know that. But my question, again, is if the Department of Veterans Affairs felt that they did not have the resources for outreach, why didn't they do something about it instead of having to rely upon the governor's office to provide that?
Let's use this segue. Does anybody else have questions for Ms. Brown about the overall issue? If not, why don't we segue into the testimony directly on Veterans Affairs? And I know hopefully the three of you will be available as this hearing continues, but we do have several people who like to testify. I'll call them up in a minute. Prior to that, as I mentioned to everybody, we do have cross jurisdictions here. And Senator Vickerman, I think you wanted to just make a couple of comments as we segue into the discussion on Veterans Affairs.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, first I want to tell you that I bought one of the first Support Our Troops license plates that was put out. I tried to use my power, but the governor had a little more power, so he got the first one. I actually got the second one. And I still displayed on my car. I've talked my sons into doing the same thing. Legislators and public both need to keep in mind that this program has raised a lot of money, which has helped veterans and their families. And we're here today just to learn more about how the $30,000 of that money was spent. So I'm here. But it's important to keep its expenditure in perspective. Remember that we're talking about a good program that raised nearly $1 million to help Minnesota veterans. Support Our Troop money has helped homeless veterans get into housing, and it has helped veterans who are experiencing a financial crisis from ending up on a street. The plate also has been used to reach out to veterans who have traditionally been underserved, including minorities and women veterans. And I just want to reassure the public that this is a good program, and that they should continue to buy the Support Our Troops license plates. I know I will. I know my sons will. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Vickerman. Why don't we proceed then, have testimony. We also have a couple of bills on the agenda to discuss the particular issue, Senator Olsen and Senator Betzold. Ms. Buckley, you had asked that Ms. Vitale's testimony. We actually had her on the agenda. Maybe we could have a couple of minutes of testimony from her. And then I've got six folks out of the veterans service organizations that have asked to testify, and I could have maybe three and three since we're not Washington. We don't have room for 10 people up there. So would that make some sense for Ms. Vitalis to
certainly,
offer
Mr. Chair,
a bit of testimony?
Can I quickly address Senator Betzold's concerns?
Oh, sure.
Mr. Chair and Senator Betzold, that's why that fund was created, to create the outreach division. We didn't have the staff doing outreach. That's why we created the plate and then agreed to allow the proceeds to be used to do outreach. So to expect that if we already had the staff to do outreach, why would we have created the plate to support the outreach efforts? I'm not tracking. It doesn't make sense to me. We created the plate, and we designated that we could use the proceeds to fund our outreach division. We didn't have an outreach division. We had one person that was doing it, had great results. As a result of that, we convinced the legislature that outreach was a great thing to do, needed, a wonderful return on investment, and that's why we agreed to go ahead and use the Support Our Trades license plate fund to create an outreach division, which has been extremely successful. And I'd just like to say that over the past 5 years, thousands of veterans have been connected to the benefits and services they need, and over $20 million of federal dollars have gone directly into their pockets. I would put the return on investment of this program up against any state or federal program that exists. But we didn't do it before the plate existed. We couldn't. We didn't have the funding. Thanks to you, the plate was created, and the funding mechanism was now there and available to us. So thank you for that. But without that, we couldn't have done the outreach.
Well, Mr. Puglisi, have you asked the legislature for additional staff to go ahead with this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, I have not, because we have the funding available. Why would I ask for additional staff when we have the funding mechanism that exists that is providing the necessary resources we need? I wouldn't ask above and beyond. We have the fund for the outreach positions already.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me, though, that if the legislature gave you additional an appropriation for more staff, the dollars from the plates would go more to the veterans as opposed to paying somebody's salary.
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzolt, the money used in outreach goes to the veterans. Without doing outreach, as I testified earlier, they're not coming forward for the benefits and services that they need. What good are the direct services that exist if veterans and their family members are not aware or not coming forward to them? So this is a direct benefit to the veterans we serve. I don't think you understand the value of outreach. I'm trying to convey that. Without it, it doesn't do much good.
Commissioner, but is Senator Betzold's question, I'm not sure Senator Betzold said he didn't understand the value of outreach. The question is, if we're doing outreach over here as opposed to over there, and you're over there, do you have a sense of the totality of what outreach is needed? Are you then in a position to come to us and say, we're not doing enough outreach because you haven't provided funds for enough outreach people? I think that's our concern in a general sense with the interagency agreements and in the particular sense with the money being divided. Because it seems to me you're the person, and I don't know you well, but from everything I've heard, you do an excellent job as administrator of the agency. Aren't you the person who would have the best sense of what kind of outreach is needed? And shouldn't that be then entirely within your jurisdiction and direction within your office? I think that's the concern.
Mr. Chair, members, you're exactly right. And that's why I decided to do what was the most effective and efficient thing to serve a certain segment of our veteran population and enter into that interagency agreement for the services of Ms. Buckley. She did an outstanding job. She was well-connected. She was already entrenched in that community. And we only needed this part for a part-time basis. I couldn't justify a full-time employee to do this, and I didn't have the resources at that time for that. We're trying to be very wise with the funding we have. We're very aware of the economy, of the deficit, and we're thankful that we are being held at no harm, not being cut. But we're not going to go above and beyond and ask for more and more and more when we realize the current situation that the state is in. We're doing a very good job, but we're trying to be efficient with our money, and utilizing Ms. Buckley's skills and abilities was an efficient use of the limited funding we do have. Now, could we do more, as Ms. Buckley testified to earlier? Most definitely. Would we like to? Yes, we can never do enough. If you're willing to give us millions and millions of more dollars, we'll get great results for you. Give us the money.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, explain to me how the funds from the license plate come. Do they come directly from where they're collected? and Public Safety to the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes, they do. The proceeds from the sales first go to Public Safety, and then they transfer them into our account and into Military Affairs account.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think what I'm sensing is maybe the problem is that somehow is the legislature feeling that they should have control those funds and then be allocating them in order to determine how they're being used in terms of the staffing and function?
Mr. Chair.
That's what I kind of hear in the discussion around here. If all staff for Veterans Affairs needs to go through our legislative budgeting process, that somehow that this fund is kind of out of our legislative control, and there's some concern about that. Now, I don't have concern about that, mind you. I think you've explained it well, and if we have set up that system too, that the plates go to Public Safety then and the resources go to where they're determined to go, and then you're accountable for how you use them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the statute spells out exactly how we can use those funds. Three purposes. The first is outreach to veterans, which is what Ms. Buckley did. The second one is for grants to the veteran service organizations so that they can continue to do the wonderful work in the communities that they serve. Many of them that are here today benefit from the proceeds of this plate. And the third is one that was added last session so that we can fund the Gold Star plates for the families that have lost a loved one. Very good uses of that funding, and we've used it very appropriately. That's why I'm a little surprised why this is actually an issue.
Yeah. Why don't we have Ms. Vitalis testify for a couple of minutes, and then if we can bring up the service organizations after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is, for the record, Kathleen Vitalis. I'm Executive Director for Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, which is a 501c3 statewide nonprofit. And we've been in existence for over 18 years, offices in the Metro Duluth and Mankato, where we provide outreach and our services to the 87 counties in Minnesota. We provide support and services for homeless and in crisis veterans and their families. I have 12 full-time staff to do this work. And I'm here today to address specifically the benefit of Lee Buckley's work for our organization. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify. MACV utilizes all Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs, and we interface to them as it is critical we all avoid any duplication of service to our veterans in order to achieve efficiencies. The outreach services performed by Lee Buckley were absolutely needed, in my opinion and my staff's opinion, in our organization. We welcome and must welcome all avenues of outreach and referral sources. We rely on our community partners, collaborators, and work together on ensuring that a veteran in need has multiple doors with which to seek services. That is how we are going to reach those underserved veterans. This is not something one agency or one person can do by themselves. We must be creative with our outreach. Lee Buckley provided not only direct referrals to our organization, working directly with my staff, connecting us to new partners, new organizations, but she supported our mission and was a constant advocate for the services that MACV provides to the underserved veteran population in this state. I believe strongly that it was an appropriate use of the funds, given the many underserved veterans in need that we're all trying to reach. Lee Buckley made new connections for us into communities where MACV had limited visibility. Again, I state, I do our outreach with 12 full-time staff, 840 veterans directly served last year. We need all avenues that we can possibly get for outreach. Lee was an extension, a unique extension of that outreach to us, just as many, many people in this very room today are for MACV. We rely on our partners to utilize their contacts and spread the word about what our organization can do for veterans in need. She specifically facilitated statewide and national exposure for my organization. Funding for direct services goes nowhere without outreach into the community. And that is exactly in this specific case, what Lee Buckley provided, new avenues and connections specific for our organization. Governor Pawlenty and the legislature have been very supportive of our veterans and the work that we do. Many, all of you in this room, I can't thank you enough, specific to our organization and the funding that we receive. But we must continue to think of ways to keep creating efficiencies uniquely while partnering with people who have connections into communities where we do not have a strong presence. And I believe this is exactly what this program achieved: direct linkage of veterans and organizations and exposure at the same time for the MACV mission and how we can support these veterans. And that is my statement. I took out the things everyone else said already.
Thanks. And certainly, I don't think people on this committee are questioning the competence or dedication of Ms. Buckley. I will make that clear. It's the question of, is the money being used in the most, maybe appropriate is the wrong word, but in a way that's getting to where it's supposed to get in the most efficient way, I think is an issue. Senator Betzel?
Ms. Vitalis, the agreement with Ms. Buckley apparently was just a one-year deal. She's been transferred out, and now she works at the Department of Corrections. If she was doing such invaluable services, what conclusions are we supposed to draw? The fact that the governor's office decided to send her off to do something different?
I don't know if I'm the appropriate person to ask that question to, but my opinion of that is, from my organization's standpoint, we have people all the time, unique relationships that do outreach, that come in, that connect us to something, and then we take it from there. And so it's evolving all of the time. We really, really appreciated and utilized her services when she was in that position. We took advantage of it to the best of our ability so that we could continue some of those connections that she got for us. And I continue today to look at anyone who can do and continue unique outreach for us. I don't know if I'm, but I'm trying.
And are the services you got from Ms. Buckley continuing presently? Not
the relationships that the new people that we got a hold of, the new partners that we, it was a handoff. It was connections. It was introductions into, different parts of this community.
And so are you continuing to work with somebody within the state government relative to this work?
I don't work now with anyone that would have replaced specifically what she did in the governor's office, no, if that's what you're asking me.
Or anybody in Veterans Affairs?
Well, we work continually on outreach, synced up hand in hand with the Department of Veterans Affairs all the time at many different levels.
Okay. Sarah Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand your concern that we are looking for efficient use of these dollars. And I think resource sharing does prove to be very efficient. And I actually applaud Veterans Affairs for looking outside of their own organization and saying, how could we get a little more bang for our dollar? And found somebody that they only had to pay 25% of, I think they got a good deal. And Navy made very efficient use of the resources that were appropriately used, as we've heard, because that the Support Our Troops account is to be used for outreach to underserved veterans. And that's exactly what Ms. Buckley was doing. And so I really think that we should look for more resource sharing opportunities, more interagency connections. And I think that's how we are going to survive the financial problems that we're having right now in this state. And I know I have my Support Our Troops license plate on my car sitting out front, and I don't feel that I have that 1 cent of that money has been wasted in the way I've heard it being used today.
Okay, I want to hear from the service organizations for a few minutes. So are there any other questions for Ms. Vitalis? Okay, thank you. But, Sarah Roebling, just in response to your question, I think, and Senator Betzel can speak for himself, certainly, but the commissioner indicated, and we'll get back. The commissioner, I think, would like to respond to a couple things.
Everything.
And maybe the way to do this is when we hear from the service organizations, we'll bring the commissioner back as the direct person involved and maybe go through him. But I think the commissioner indicated that Ms. Buckley was being utilized 25% of the time. The transfer from support of troops was 30,000. So that would suggest she was getting a salary of 120,000 or so, which I assume she wasn't in the governor's office. And what about this 25%? But we can get back into that. Let's give some of the service organizations an opportunity. I've got a list of names, and again, because we've got three chairs up there, I'm going to call them up three by three, and you can introduce yourselves and your particular organization and just offer some of your advice and comments to the committee. Al Holton, Ralph Donay, and Jerry Kyson. My handwriting's bad enough, but I hope I'm pronouncing the names correctly. So welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Al Holton. I'm the commander of the Disabled American Veterans of the state of Minnesota. I'm also the chair of the CTF, the Commander's Task Force, retired veteran service officer, and retired military person with 29 years of service. After sitting here and listening to all the testimony that has been presented, I quite frankly do not know what all the fuss is about. As we heard, under Minnesota statutes, money from the Support Our Troop Fund is to be used for, and I go over them again, grants to veteran service organizations, outreach to underserved veterans, and transfers to the vehicle services account to pay for Gold Star license plates. The Department of Veterans Affairs has hired Lee to help them reach out to the faith-based community and to help underserved veterans. I think that we got a real bang for our buck. So again, the fuss, I don't know. Well, we all know why. We're in the Capitol. Politics happens here. It's an easy way to say money for veterans is going to pay for political staff. The problem with that statement is misleading. Money from that fund paid for the services of a professional to do outreach to veterans in the faith-based community. And again, exactly what the statute calls for. On behalf of the Commander's Task Force, which includes 9 congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, we do not appreciate having veterans used in this manner. But now the misconception is out there and is very likely will have unintended consequences. We're deeply concerned that these actions may have on the sales of the Support Our Troops license plates. There have been negative articles in the newspaper, radio, the internet, now I heard this morning even on TV. And they are scaring people away from the Support Our Troops license plates. If this continues, there will be less money in that fund for the Department of Veterans Affairs as well as the Department of Military Affairs to do the important work that they do. As you can see, there are a lot of veterans here today concerned about this issue. Let's stop the negative, turn this into something positive. I think the commissioner voted something about lemons to lemonade. I urge you to stop, think about what we're doing. Please work with us to get the message out about the good work that is being done by the Veterans Affairs and the Military Affairs departments. They are working to help our veterans and are doing a darn good job of it. Please work with us to turn this around. Work with us to get the message out to the public to support our troops by continuing to buy these plates. I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. I believe that some of you have damaged a program that supports our veterans' family, and the men and women who right now are serving our nation around the world. They do so, which allows you to discredit a veterans program without utilizing the procedures established to make sure of any wrongdoing, a procedure that should follow even in an election year. Our Minnesota Department of Veterans serves our veterans well. To put a doubt in the minds of Minnesotans is a shameful thing to do. I ask that when the proper investigation is completed, that the people of Minnesota are informed of the outcome. As a military leader, I would like to add that even in my division of electronics or avionics, when there was a young person that had excellent skills that worked in another section, I oftentimes utilized that person in my section. I don't see anything wrong with taking an expert that works somewhere else and saying, I can use you. Please come and help. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a Vietnam combat veteran, and Ralph and I are both, and Al is also, and I'm the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. It encompasses the rest of the veterans organizations in this state, 30 or more organizations, and we are not very happy about the publicity that's generated by this. And the problem is that the collateral damages, that these funds that are out there, I've looked at the blogs on the newspapers, and it's we're hoping that this, like everyone says here, they'd like to turn it into a positive reinforcement of the program. We are not happy about it. We want to make it right, and you ladies and gentlemen have the opportunity to do that and say the right things to get this back on. I don't want people stopping buying these plates or not renewing them. I've already had phone calls about that. And the perception is reality. And we need to get the perception changed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And just to offer a quick comment to the three of you and appreciate your testimony, because as has been indicated from several members of this committee, there's, I don't think, any doubt on the part of any committee member as to the support of our troops plate, what it means, what the monies are utilized for, and the need for the monies. You suggested that, you know, perception could become the reality. And somebody's been in politics for quite a while. There's no question that's something that bothers me continually. So you know, one purpose of this hearing is to clear up some of this, and I think your testimony offers some strong is a strong testament to what this can do. And if there are doubts that have been generated out there, whether through the legislative process, through the media, you know, this becomes then an opportunity to correct that, as you suggest. And again, that's part of this, is with this issue having raised to a level, we want to try to explore what we should do or not do. And again, I have to emphasize to you and to the next group of witnesses that part of this isn't even so much this particular program, but just a question of how we relate to the governor's office and how the agencies relate to the governor's office, which is, you know, we could have any number of programs or agencies up here. This just kind of rose to that level. But appreciate your testimony, because it offers that much further clarification as to the needed utilization of the support of our troops plate and programs derived from it. So appreciate the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we have the Air Service folks were Richard Jenkins, Dan Poole, and Nancy Gerthner. Okay. I'm not sure maybe in the order, Mr. Jenkins.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Richard Jenkins, Sr., a National Chaplain for the Military Order Purple Heart Combat Wounded Veterans. There are close to 45,000 combat wounded veterans throughout the United States and Asia Pacific, Guam. As a combat veteran of Vietnam, wounded in action 45 years ago, I took the liberty to serve as the chairman to honor and to welcome home all Vietnam-era veterans in the year 2009, June 13, here at the state capitol. Mrs. Lee Buckley, that I had secured services for her to help me to appoint speakers and to come to the platform to make sure that we had all veterans represented. I'm well known in the black community, well known in the veterans community, and Lee Buckley is also. At the same time, as an ordained minister for well over 30 years, there's a scripture says, "Let not your good be evil spoken of." In light of what has happened, it has put a taint on the veterans, especially the Vietnam veterans. No one knows the sacrifices that we as Vietnam veterans have gone through, the ostracism, the rejection, the abandonment. At the same time, we as veterans, we will not allow our veterans, especially the Iraqi veterans, the Afghanistan veterans, to go through what we have gone through. It's a great sacrifice. This is not a time to debate. to say, well, that we want to try to find some misappropriation of funding. It's hard. It's hard out there. It's difficult. For 25 years, I had suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. I served as a point man, the first to catch a sniper's bullet, the first to step on a booby trap, the first to come ensnared against adversity. And as one of the things that I'm so thankful of, Deputy Commissioner Mike Pugliese was willing to tap into the resources to help recruit veterans, especially from people of color. We have people of color who have held this anger, this inward of being represented in the community. And so she has gone out of her way. And if she has, she's no longer in that position, but we cannot allow anything to come into this in regards to inflicting pain upon the veterans, because they already have difficulties in really being accepted. And so we're seeing people now, especially the women who are fighting beside the men in Afghanistan, who are of childbearing age, who are going through all types of issues and post-traumatic stress disorder. So I'm speaking for it in behalf as a representative of the Combat Wounded Veterans of America. It's the oldest medal ever awarded, the Military Order Purple Heart. And so we want our veterans to be honored. We want them to be recognized. And we want them to be able to go to come and go as they please. Thank you very much.
Okay, I appreciate the comments, and I hesitate to start offering editorial comments after each person testifying, but I don't think there should be any mistake on the part of anybody. I think all of us hold the vets in the highest respect. I mean, I can talk about at length, and I've had conversations with some people on this committee about that, just private conversations about you know, the pride I took with my father and every relative I grew up around who served in World War II, of course. And I think one of the good things that the Congress and this legislature have done, and arguably I assume other legislatures around the country, is to have recognized the public policy mistakes made relative to the Vietnam era vets and have not allowed that to happen to the extent that it did with the Gulf War vets. And you know, I don't think any of us were around the legislature during you know, the Vietnam era, obviously, but even though I think on this committee we've only got three vets, I think, maybe four. I mean, Senator Foley, I'm not sure. You're a vet.
World War II.
And Senator Murphy.
What?
Oh, and Senator Murphy and Senator Betzel and Senator Frederickson, of course. The rest of us are not.
Mr. Chairman, I'm married to a vet. Does that count?
No. Nope. Does not count. Your spouse counts in that regard.
I think it counts.
But I think certainly the legislature has, I think, been pretty good, as has Governor Plenty's administration and these two or three previous administrations, Governor Ventura, Governor Carlson, as we came into the Gulf War and the subsequent wars, to recognize that there were significant public policy mistakes made by political leaders in the aftermath of Vietnam with what happened with vets. So that is kind of an overview of this, but I just wanted to make the comment. So I'm not sure who was next. I think Mr. Poole or Ms. Gerthner? Whoever wants to go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Gerthner. I'm not here representing any organization. I'm representing only myself, Citizen Nancy. I'm a military veteran, and I'm a Minnesotan. And I just wanted to, I guess, tell you that when we look at the website, which is available to all Minnesotans to see, regarding the Governor's Council on Faith and Community Initiatives, it indicates that the reason for the creation of this was to develop a closer relationship between the state government and faith and community organizations by increasing access to existing funding resources. And I don't see that the website shows any results that the council has actually worked to achieve any additional funding resources, either through federal grants or through foundation grants. And so it seems like the results that I'm hearing that have been obtained through the staffing for this office are other than what the purpose is shown on the website. And so it looks like there's maybe a kind of a disconnect there. And the website also shows that it has a link directly to the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. And that link is broken. It no longer works for the electronic link. And so that can also give us Minnesotans the appearance that the Governor's Office for Faith-Based Initiatives is not connected with our national White House Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. So that is just what I wanted to offer to you, Mr. Chair, and members
Thank
of the committee.
You. Mr. Poole.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Poole. I'm a veteran, retired colonel, as is Senator Betzold. Specifically, I wanted to talk about my experience as the commander of mobilization and demobilization at Fort McCoy from 2004 to 2006. I shook hands with over 6,000 returning folks that came back from Iraq and surrounding areas, and had the opportunity to speak to a large number of them. And there were a fairly significant percentage of Minnesotans in that group. And I'd always ask them, the first question is, where are you from? And then my second question was, okay, what's that near? Because these folks were generally not from St. Paul or Minneapolis or Brainerd or someplace that I knew. Small towns all over the place. And so when I read about these the situation that we have here, where there's some concern about how the governor's office is reaching across departmental lines, and specifically I can relate to this one, that concerned me, because, you know, here's a person up in a place I don't even remember, up in northwestern Minnesota, who doesn't have perhaps a state office there that provides some Veterans Affairs services and things of that nature. Where are they going to go? Well, they go to something that's more likely supported by the faith-based initiatives area. They go to their church. Very often, the folks would go to the chaplain when they had an issue. That's first stop. They wouldn't come to the commander until, you know, well after that. So my point is that a lot of these folks come back, they feel a lot more comfortable initially going to a non-bureaucratic or non-government entity. They feel more comfortable going to something that's a community organization, and to maybe instead of penalizing that type of activity, perhaps looking at, you know, how can we facilitate this so that there's less bureaucracy, fewer subcommittees and things of that nature, and then perhaps giving an opportunity for folks who do things very well to do those with the funding that is available.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Puel. And appreciate the testimony of all three of you and the previous three. This offers members of the committee a good segue.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Before we totally make that segue, could I ask that Dean Ashelman come to the table for just a very brief testimony?
Andy to the table.
Mr. Chairman, and this and committee members, this is not directly related to this specific use of Save the Troops funds or Support Our Troops funds, but Dean Ashelman is now working with and overseeing the trust fund that was created as a result with the money from the sale of the veterans camp on Big Island in Lake Minnetonka. And the state did come forward with some great pleading here with a part of the funds to acquire that, with requested by the city of Orno, who led the charge, because they wanted to see that remain in public hands. And so I think it was $2 million of state bonding money, and the city matched that with more than that, and the watershed district paid, I think, like $850,000 for a conservation easement that preserved that for all time. But that money went into a fund for the veterans that had been prescribed by our statute. If anything ever happened to sell that camp, that's the route it would go. And Dean Ashelman has been managing that. Could you just give them a brief report on how those funds are being used?
Very brief. First, I'd like to introduce a couple other members of the board of that fund.
Mr. Ashelman, I'm sorry. If I could just ask you to identify yourself for the record, and then
I'm Dean Ashelman, past state commander of the Disabled American Veterans. Marlon Ronning from the American Legion is also a member of the board that oversees this $5 million fund. and Al Holton, who spoke earlier. But first of all, I just want to thank all of the legislators that had an involvement in the appropriation for the sale of Big Island to the City of Orono. We have actually granted close to $600,000 to veterans projects, many of them that you heard about today. But I just want to very briefly thank you all for being a part of that decision.
Okay, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. And thanks for what you're doing with Big Lake. Let's, you know, relative to what Colonel Peel suggested in terms of you know, offering some clarification, whatever, we do have two bills on the agenda that I think this would offer a chance to talk about them, Sarah Betzold and Sarah Olsen, which I think would provide some of the clarification. We can get into it, you know, further discussion of the fund, but I think the legislation offers some opportunity to do that. So, Sarah Betzold, do you want to join Sarah Olsen? I think the order we have is, and the bill's members are in your packets, Senate File 3260 is Sarah Olsen, 3066 Sarah Betzold. So why don't we have a discussion of both bills, and then we can decide, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, and we can decide what kind of action to take. So, Sarah Olsen, if...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I'll just make one more quick comment. This has been the most successful license plate for bringing money than anything we've ever put together, and there's plates all over. Been the most successful. I'm nervous, and then, just like the speakers before, I don't want people to say, why in my world would I buy that license plate if it's not going where I want it to go? So I want just to reassure, I hope they're watching and I hope to take the message back, that this is a good program and we need to continue this program.
With that, Mr. Chair, members, Chairman. I appreciate Senator Vickerman's comments there because that's the goal of my bill, Senate File 3260, to give people the reassurance that there'll be transparency and accountability for these dollars. That, and I've appreciated the turnout of the veterans today and also the discussion that's happened prior to my testimony now. But I think one of the things that is so important about these dollars, that different than dollars that we deal with every day, is that people are going above and beyond and paying for this with their own money. This is not a tax collection. This is a donation that they're making. And that's why I think we need to address the issue that's been before us today. And it actually came to my attention. I sit on Senator Betzel's State Government Budget Committee, and this line item just came out of $30,000 that was from the Support Our Troops. And so then the questioning came forward from that, and that is what the bill before us today is. It's a two-part bill. The first part talks about the money, that it has to be used appropriately from the fund, and then also notification to the legislature when there's fund transfers. And we put down that the chairs and ranking minority members. I think it's important that Senator Vickerman's committee and our State Government Budget Committee, we have an idea where these funds are going. Because when we're looking at all the budgets we look at in the State Government Budget Committee, we're looking at millions and millions of dollars, but all of a sudden, like I mentioned earlier, this one kind of jumped out, and it's like, wait a minute. Why are these funds going to the governor's office? Like I said, I appreciated the discussion earlier on the interagency agreements, but I would just like to say on the second part of the bill that... And Senator Betzel and I spoke earlier. I think he's going to steal my language, but that's fine with me. I'm sorry. I think he's taking the first part of the bill. But the second part of the bill addresses the governor's office to pay that money back to the account. And there again, it goes back to the transparency and accountability of this account. People that are going beyond writing that check for supporting troops, they expect that those dollars are going to support the troops. And as the discussion carried previously, I think that we need a bill like this to clarify that.
Thank you. Why don't we have some discussion of Senator Betzel, if you might present your bill, and we'll get into committee discussion of the two bills.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment to my bill. Senate File 3066 is actually an agency bill by the Department of Veterans Affairs. I introduced it by request on behalf of the agency. I wanted to have a full discussion and understanding of what their proposal was. They have indicated to me that the current law, which allows the support our troops going to the Department of Veterans Affairs, currently allows for grants to veteran services organizations and to outreach to underserved veterans. And also transfers to accounts for Gold Star plates. They would like to have the use of the funds within the Department of Veterans Affairs to be expanded to provide services and programs to veterans and their families. They say there's a great need for this, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. However, what I would like to offer within the A1 amendment, and is basically to ensure, and this is, again, getting back to the public trust, that the money may not be transferred out of the account for any purpose not related to the account. Now, that could be, of course, there could be debate as to whether or not the use of the funds to pay for Ms. Buckley's salary was within the use of the outreach of underserved veterans. But I think I want to make sure that, you know, we have a clear understanding that it is that the funds are to be used for the intended purposes and no other. And further, that at least, you know, any time before transfer is made out of the account, Commissioner of Management and Budget must report the proposed transfer to the chair of the ranking minority members of the legislative committees with jurisdiction over military and veteran affairs. So that if transfers are to be made in the future, as was done here, that we would know about it. Again, this is something the public has a right to know, legislators have a right to know. So we would like to know just how the funds are to be used, and so I would offer the A1 amendment to Senate File 3066.
Okay, to put the bill in the shape the author is requesting, this is the first hearing in the bill. We have the A1 amendment distributed. If there's no further discussion, all those
Mr.
in favor?
Chair.
Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment is very similar to Section 1 of Senator Olsen's bill. I think it's exactly
Senator Olsen
the same.
Said that.
So I'm trying. Okay, so are we merging the two bills right now?
Mr. Chair, I don't. My bill does not get into the transfer of the funds. My bill just deals with an agency bill. And actually, I informed when I met with Mr. Puglisi in my office last week, I indicated to him that I would like to have some mechanism to fence out the funds to make sure that there is better oversight on them. And so it just happened that Senator Olsen happened to introduce his bill. But the concept of his bill, I want to adopt in my bill. But the transfer of funds, I'll leave that to his bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chairman, I've listened carefully to everything that's been said here, but I think this paragraph assumes that that has been going on and that the transfer that was made was not related to the purposes of the account. And I think a fairly strong case has been made that that was not the case. So are we, by putting this in, just trying to reinforce that that the veterans organizations and the Office of Veterans Affairs needs to have this hold on them because they're not following their own law for the use of this fund and are trying to skirt around it and move the money out for purposes that it's not intended for?
Senator Olsen, not in the least. What we're doing with Senator Betzel's amendment is what we always do is offer the courtesy to a chief author to put the bill in the shape that he or she desires in the initial presentation. That's what we're doing with this vote.
Mr. Chairman, but I'm just raising that issue.
But if you then want to vote against the bill, amend the bill, whatever, as we always do in the normal process, obviously that's fair game. But
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olsen.
Yes, we do that courtesy, but Senator Betzold has introduced this bill by request, which always sends a signal that there isn't a great commitment or attachment to that bill when you do that by request. So it's I'm just raising the issue.
Okay. All right. We have Senator Sedgham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I look at this, and I'll stand corrected, but it seems to me that we have agencies across the scope of state government, whether it's the Department of Human Services, health departments, DNR, and so on. They all have funds. They all have accounts. They all make transfers. And I almost hate to say it, but to me, it seems like we're going to trust everybody else that makes all these transfers all over, all through state government, out to all these individual causes. But somehow, in Veterans Affairs, we have to have a reporting mechanism such that we're sure of what they do. I trust Veterans Affairs. It just seems to me this amendment, this approach is an insult to Veterans Affairs. I know we don't want to do that. I just think we're going down the wrong road and we ought to not do this.
Senator Sinema, let me just make the comment because I don't think you were here for the entirety of the hearing, but I'm not sure if you were here for the discussion of Ms. Brown. My concern hasn't been so much Veterans Affairs at all. My concern has been at the higher level of the transparency of these interagency agreements. I don't know if you were here for the discussion we had with Ms. Brown or not, but that's been my concern more so than the administration of this program. But we have Senator Betzel's motion.
Mr.
Chairman.
This, I believe, calls for Veterans Affairs to make that report to the ranking member. To the chair and the ranking member. It doesn't call for the governor to do that. Calls for the agency to do that. I don't know why this agency should have to do it. No other agency does it, as far as I know.
Mr. Chairman, I think that I ate a pretty good dose of crow earlier in saying that I was mistaken about some of the comments that I made, Senator Sinema, because I was a day late and a dollar short. Just like you coming to committee late, mm-hmm. Day late, dollar short. You didn't hear some of the discussion that's went on. I have, Senator Vickerman and I are sitting here twisting in the wind. My frustration with this whole thing has not been with the way that the money was spent. I think my initial outburst, which led to this whole thing, I did draw into question because I didn't know, Senator Sinema. I didn't know what we were using the money for. And any time, and this is my beef with the governor's office, but any time the governor's office has been involved in negotiations that I've been involved with, Senator Sinema, it hasn't come out very good. And that's why I question this program. I was wrong, Senator Sinema. I don't think we need either one of these bills, guys. I really don't. But with that said, what I can say is that I believe that after talking with Mr. Puglisi and my friend Al Holton, who used to be the county veteran service officer in one of the counties that I represent, that this money has been well spent. My only question is that Ms. Buckley did a fantastic job. If she's gone, who's providing that function now, Mr. Puglisi? And are we willing to, in our next budget, put money in the Department of Veterans Affairs to double up that effort? And that's where I've always been with veterans issues, and I think there's a lot of people in this room that realize that. We've been underserved, period. Now, Senator Olsen and Senator Betzel, I don't think we need this legislation. But that's not to say that it's not a valid argument to try to find out why it is that we need all of these agreements, these interagency agreements, when if we're going to blur the lines from between one department and the next, why don't we just be upfront about it and just do it out front instead of having so many of these agreements, which quite frankly is confusing. And it's confusing to the public too. I think more than anything, if we just clear that up, this whole thing would go away. But I'm the one that squawked the loudest about this when it first came out. And I tell you what, if I could grab those words and shove them back down my throat, Senator Sinema, I most certainly would. And sometimes as legislators, and I know, that's my own fault, is sometimes I get a little ginned up when I ought to settle down a little bit, and a few phone calls here and there, and I think this could have been avoided. And Mr. Puglisi, just so the record's clear, Mr. Puglisi and the folks down in your department do a hell of a job, period. And I don't think that any of this should have a negative reflection on the services that you provide. I really don't think so. And if that is what was projected in the newspaper, that was clearly not the intention of myself or Senator Betzel or Senator Olsen or anyone. I mean, that's the last thing that we want to do is to give our service organizations a black eye. And, you know, I wish that we could roll the clock back a couple, 4 or 5 days and restart this discussion.
Mr. Chairman?
Has anybody in this committee ever seen Senator Murphy ginned up? I don't know that I've recalled that. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I appreciate, you know, we all know you. But
that was exactly my point. Better stated.
But I'm not finished. But I also appreciate the fact that when you have realized that you misspoke, you've admitted it, and you've admitted it publicly. Thanks very much for that. But I would challenge you just slightly on before you abandon both the bills. There's one of them we don't need, and we don't need this amendment to this one. But I think that we need to hear why the department has requested some expanded use of the Support Your Troops funds. I mean, we already now have outreach as a legitimate use of those funds, but there apparently is there more money? I heard Senator Vickerman said it's raised over $1 million. Maybe these three functions don't require all of that, along with the budgets that we do provide for them, but that there's another function that could go to. And so I'd like to hear from the department on that aspect of it. But I know we have an amendment before for us that I hope we don't pass.
Well, certainly,
because I think it will weaken the bill, okay. Senator Betzel's bill. And I think we've done enough of that now, and I think we ought to get back to the real mission.
No, Senator Olson, it's certainly appropriate to hear from the commissioner relative to, you know, where we are procedurally. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, you're exactly right. We're hoping to expand the usage of the fund so that we can, when need be, provide those direct services and benefits, as Senator Betzolt was talking about earlier. Right now, with the current economy, many of our veterans are suffering more so than they have in the past. They're at risk of losing their homes, they're jobless, and some of our programs are bleeding, and we're running out of funds. So we see this as a way to backfill. There's certainly no money available in the state. We know that. So this is a way we felt we could backfill behind some of our needed programs, the Minnesota Corps program that's doing a tremendous job in the communities, as well as our State Soldiers Assistance Program, which provides funding and services to the neediest of our veteran community. So this will enable us to use those resources that exist through the Support Our Troops License Plate Fund to backfill for those needed programs. And I am open to transparency with this fund. We've been as transparent as possible. I'll appear before any committee anytime and talk about how we use those funds and the good results we get out of them. I think both of these bills are unnecessary and, once again, are drawing negative scrutiny to the Support Our Troops License Plate, which is the exact wrong thing that we should be doing. We're trying to pump up this plate, talk about the good it does so that we can continue to support these needed services. And this just detracts away from that and points the finger saying, obviously, you're not using it right. We need this language. And we paid $30,000 for 25% of a salary. That includes benefits. Her salary was nowhere near $120,000. I want to make that clear. So, you know, I think doing this, putting this negative scrutiny on it, is exactly why the veterans here are outraged. You're hurting our ability to serve our veteran community by doing this.
Saying, Commissioner, what we're trying to do is to cut through all the discussion chaff and so on. We've had a discussion again at the level of interagency agreements. In fact, what I took from that discussion, which is where I started, not the Support Our Troops thing, but where I started with the interagency agreements, and what I took from Ms. Brown's testimony is, and I'll talk to Senator Betzel about this after the hearing, we're not prepared right now, but I think when we have the finance bill on the floor of the Senate next week, I think possibly we should try to take appropriate amounts from agency budgets
not just Veterans Affairs, but any agency budget, and add it to the governor's budget, is what I'm taking away from this hearing. Now, Senator Betzold is the chairman of that division, and I would defer to him as to why that's advisable, because I'm not prepared to do anything like that right now. And it has nothing to do with Veterans Affairs. It has to do with transportation, revenue, public safety, pollution control, et cetera, is what I'm taking away from this hearing. That's the legislative action that I think might be appropriate in terms of the transparency I'm looking for. I don't think anybody is here to destroy veterans programs, and I think your rhetoric in that respect is maybe a little bit of a field. I don't think anybody's indicated that.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't. Perhaps it's not the intent, but that's what's happening. That's the perception that's being placed out in the community, and that's what the public is seeing. And they're the ones that are supposed to be buying this plate and supporting us. Drawing negative attention, which is what this does, to the Support Our Troops plate, is not supporting veterans. I'm sorry.
Well, I think what I heard from a lot of the veterans who testified was a concern about some of the attention being paid to the issue, newspaper stories, blogs, whatever, information and misinformation that's out there, and that this hearing offers an opportunity, as Senator Murphy suggested, to kind of set the record straight and get a different message out there. So to that extent, this hearing arguably, I would like to think, is of some benefit in that regard.
Mr. Chair, I agree. I think we did clarify. I think hopefully everybody realizes that the funds that were used to fund Lee Buckley's position was a wise decision, and if so, why this language?
Okay, well, that's a separate issue, yeah. But I think...
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman,
in my rambling remarks earlier, I had a question for Mr. Puglisi about what are we going to do to continue the efforts of Ms. Buckley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, it's an excellent question. You know, as I testified earlier, we are still receiving the dividends paid by her efforts, and many people here today are those that she connected us to in the community. We have those relationships ongoing. They're strong. We're cultivating them and developing more. Our full-time outreach division and staff work with those individuals that she connected us to. And as I said, it continues to pay dividends. As you said, would I like to have more outreach staff, Senator Murphy? Most definitely. The fact that only 40% of veterans ever come forward and get their benefits is deplorable. And as Lee Buckley testified to, we need to do more. We want to do more. And we need more resources. So the fact that any negative scrutiny can hamper our ability to raise funds through this license plate is the exact opposite of what everybody's talking about doing, supporting veterans, giving more for veterans. All of these negative things that we're portraying towards the plate have an adverse effect. You know, we're basically saying with these bills here today, well, what you're doing isn't appropriate. And we need to take a look at what you're doing more closely. And, in fact, the money you spent on this position obviously wasn't wise because we want you, Governor, to give the money back. That was worth every penny, that $30,000. I would do it again in a second.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Puglisi, I'm not doubting that at all. So your position is on the Olsen bill, you feel that we don't need to do that, and then the Betzold bill, the Betzold bill is only expanding the program, and I take it that without the amendment on it, the department would support that initiative.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, you're exactly correct, and if we want to, I mean, we're already doing that, exactly what the amendment calls for. We haven't transferred anything out that wasn't appropriate. We will ever do that. Mm-hmm. And if you'd like to build in that, I report before a certain committee, including Senator Betzold's committee, on an annual basis about how we've used the funding. I'd be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's necessary. And I think Senator Olsen's language is actually going to have an adverse effect. I don't think it's welcomed by the veteran community. It's certainly not welcomed by me.
Well, and Commissioner, let's make it clear a couple things. First of all, if we're going to make reports, obviously, as you know, your report goes to Senator Vickerman's committee, not Senator Betzold's committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chairman, the current law that's in Amendment 1 does just that. The Adjutant General must report, and if you read down to the point 1.7 and 1.8, the number, amount, and use of grants made by the Adjutant General from the Minnesota Support Our Troops account in the previous year. They're already reporting that, and they're reporting it to the legislative committees with jurisdiction. So it seems to me that's all that's necessary. The other is all aimed at getting at the little piece that we've been
hearing about, and that's why I would just encourage the support. It appears that if there's some greater flexibility that is added to their what's in not current statute for the use of these funds, I'll tell you right now that my pickup truck doesn't have a special license plate on it, and I will buy a support our troops license for it when it comes up next. So hopefully this isn't going to do damage, and I hope that word does get out and change that. But I think we should pass Senator Betzold's bill as requested.
Okay. And to committee members, I know several hands are up. I apologize. I'm being called down to the Tax Committee right now, and it sounds like there's further discussion that is going to be taking place. We're going to be in session in a couple minutes. I think what we have to do at this point is to lay these bills on the table, and because we're not going to finish these bills clearly today. Let's lay them on the table and continue the discussion later on. I apologize for my dashing out, but then we can discuss with the authors how they'd like to proceed.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I think you're making a mistake in letting this brew further.
Well,
yeah. I'm sorry. Absolutely. I think you ought to.
And Mr. Chair, Senator these Bessel. Folks all came down, and I.
That's a fair statement, Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy,
if I can make one last statement here before we vote, you know, I really think that we should just pass 3066 the way it is, Senator Betzold, and
the other.
Senator Olsen, I really don't think that we need to do your bill. I really don't think so, and I think that the testimony reflects that.
Senator Betzold, did you have a Senator Olsen?
Mr. Chairman, members, I've appreciated the conversation today, and I would like to lay my bill over.
Okay. Senator Betzold, what would you like to do?
Well, Mr. Chair, again, if you read the language of the A1 amendment, I think that this, if anything, would install more confidence in the public that the money is going to be used properly. And if the Department of Veterans Affairs says, yes, we've used every dime of it properly and so forth, they should have nothing to be concerned about with the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner,
members, I don't have a problem with transparency. I really don't have a problem if this all existed prior to all the controversy that's recently been created. I wouldn't have an issue with it at all. I think this is implying now and sending a message to the public that we are not doing what's right, and that's the public perception that already exists. That just throws more fuel on the fire. That's why I'm opposed to it. If there's another way we can open it up and ensure that doesn't happen, I'm fine. As I said, I'll testify before anywhere and show you how we're using the funds.
Okay. Well, we have Senator Betzold's amendment to his bill in front of us, the A1 amendment. Senator Betzold has moved the amendment. If there's no further discussion, Senator Wieger, I saw your hand up, but
I agree with Senator Murphy.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just very briefly, and I would just go back and we don't demand this out of any other agency that I know of in statute. Why do it with Veterans Affairs?
All right, we have Senator Betzold's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Okay, then we have Senator Betzold's bill in front of us.
Mr. Chair, please lay the bill over.
Okay, Senator Betzold has requested the bill be laid on the table, so that takes care of both the bills. I think this has been discussion has been helpful. Senator Betzold, I would like to pursue my concern in terms of the interagency agreements that you and I have discussed on a larger level, and you and I can discuss this prior to the finance bill coming up for a vote. And I appreciate everybody who came to attend the hearing. Committee's adjourned.
I guess I could talk to him in person.